प्रेमसिको सुखसरितमय प्रभुनित्य आनंद श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि श्रीगौर भक्तवृन्द की जय। श्याम वेद भक्तवृन्द की जय। गौरा प्रेमनंदिनी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड गोपीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड गोपीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द लोटस फीट गुरु एंड गौरांगा। Rahugana converses with Jadbharata. This is text number 7 this morning. Shurar Ritta Swaha Kva Cha Nirna Dita Shocham Vimukhyan Upayati Kashmalam Vachitcha Gandharvapuram Pravishtaha Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam Shurartaswakvacha Nirvittam Surarita Swakvacha Nirvinachita
Surarita Swakvacha Nirvinachita
Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishta
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishta
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
Shurarita Swakvacha Nirvinachita Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishta
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishta
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
Shurarita Swakvacha Nirvinam Chita Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishtah
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishtah
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam Surarita Swakvacha Nirvinachita
Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishtah
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
Surarita Swakvacha Nirvinachita
Shocham Vimushyan Upayati Kashmalam
Vachitcha Gandharva Puram Pravishtah
Pramodate Nirvittavan Muhurtam
प्रयाति कश्मदाम्
चित्च
गन्धर्वपुरं प्रविष्ट
Very powerful enemies. Vrittasvaha, all of whose possessions had been stolen. Kvacha, sometimes. Nirvindacheta, very morose, and aggrieved at heart. Shochan, deeply lamenting. Vimukhyan,
becomes bewildered.
Upayati,
achieves.
Kashmalam,
unconsciousness.
Kvachit,
sometimes.
Cha, also. Gandharva Puram, an imaginary city in the forest.
Ravishtaha,
having entered.
Pramodate,
he enjoys. Nirvittevat, exactly like a person who has achieved success. Muhurtam, for a moment only. Translation. Sometimes being defeated or plundered by a superior, powerful agent, a living entity loses all his possessions. He then becomes very morose, and lamenting their loss, he sometimes becomes unconscious. Sometimes he imagines a great palatial city in which he desires to live happily with his family members and riches. He thinks himself fully satisfied if this is possible. But such so-called happiness continues only for a moment. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word Gandharva Puram, there in the middle of the third line, a city of the Gandharvas. The word Gandharva Puram is very significant in this verse. Sometimes in the forest, a very big castle appears, and this is called a castle in the air. Actually, this castle does not exist anywhere but in one's imagination. This is called Gandharva Pura. In the material forest, the conditioned soul sometimes contemplates great castles, skyscrapers, and he wastes his energy for such things, hoping to live in them very peacefully with his family forever. However, the laws of nature do not allow this. When he enters such castles, he temporarily thinks that he is very happy, even though his happiness is impermanent. His happiness may last for a few years, but because the owner of the castle has to leave the castle at the time of death, everything is eventually lost. This is the way of worldly transactions. Such happiness is described by Vidyapati as the happiness one derives upon seeing a drop of water in the desert. The desert is heated by scorching sunshine. And if you want to reduce the desert temperature, we need huge amounts of water, millions and millions of gallons. What effect will one drop have? Water certainly has value. But one drop of water cannot reduce the heat of the desert. In this material world, everyone is ambitious. But the heat is very scorching. What will an imaginary castle in the air do to help? Srila Vidyapati has therefore sung Takala Sakate Vari Bindu Sama Suptamita Ramani Samaji. The happiness of family, life, friends and society is compared to a drop of water in the scorching desert. The entire material world is busy trying to attain happiness because happiness is the prerogative of the living being. Unfortunately, due to falling into contact with the material world, the living entity simply struggles for existence. Even if one becomes happy for a while, a very powerful enemy may plunder everything. There are many instances in which big businessmen suddenly became paupers, that is to say, very poor people, pauper. P-A-U-P-E-R, pauper. Became paupers in the street. Yet the nature of material existence is such that foolish people are attracted to these transactions and they forget the real business of self-realization. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Kiramane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaurabhani Pacharane Nibhise Sasundi Bhai Pacharade Sakarane Om Mangyana Kirmarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakuru Militam Jainam Sarasmai Si Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpatribhishcha Kripa Sindhu Bheva Chapatitanam Agnevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So here, in the forest of material enjoyment, sometimes somebody very strong, Asura. Asura really means like a big, powerful person, a hero. Somebody really big and powerful comes along, takes away everything you own. Hrittaswa means takes everything that's yours. Completely. And so when this happens, one laments, becomes aggrieved, and in fact bewildered. And kashmalam either means you completely become unconscious or insane. Sometimes kashmalam is just totally crazy, which we see. You've worked so hard, you've got everything, and you encounter somebody, just like if you're in the forest, you know, some big person can come. So then the other thing that happens, it says here, is that you see a Gandharva Pura, an imaginary city in the forest, a castle near, actually a fairy city, or a fairy castle. You know, if you have this word in fairies, you know, you might fairy. Gandharvas are actually, I think, the same thing. What is an injury in fairy? The little people, they live in the woods, and they, Ireland is full of fairies. That's a big place for fairies. Now, people think that fairies are these little cute people because of Walt Disney. And Tinkerbell. But no, fairies are very powerful beings. Sometimes in this Lord of the Ring, the reputation of fairies is being restored. They're very powerful. If you follow popular culture. Anyway, this is... So so Gandharvas, what you read about Gandharvas and what you hear about the fairies from the old days, it seems like the same people. And here's the same thing, because this Gandharva Puram, in English there's this thing called a Fata Morgana. Fata means fairy in Latin. And so this is actually the same thing, a big city of the fairies that people sometimes report seeing, but it's thought to be a kind of illusion, a mirage. You know. So this Gandharapura, one may see this wonderful castle, and now everything is fine. And there are many stories of people somehow under some spell or enchantment going into one castle and feasting and enjoying and everything, and they wake up and it's all gone, it disappears. So like that, these are the conditions of the material world. In the material forest, the conditioned soul sometimes contemplates great castles and skyscrapers. And he wastes his energy for such things, hoping to live in them very peacefully with his family forever. Yeah, so they're big builders of these things. In America, it became the fashion in the 80s to build bigger and bigger houses. If you travel there, you see people are living in absolutely enormous houses. All the new houses are just large, like SUVs. Everything is big, you know, too big for the people in them. And especially in Hollywood, this became quite a thing to build the biggest possible house. So people would buy properties, buy a house in Hollywood or Bel Air, one of these places where these rich people live. And already there's a building and there's a house in it that's pretty new. But the term that people use to say, oh, that's a tear down. They call the house a tear down. Because what they do is they buy it immediately, they tear it down, even though it's fairly new, and they build something as huge as possible. Within the limits of the law, how big you can make it go out and how high you can make it. So these people started to, you know, build these with this idea of tear downs. And people like really pretty good houses were being torn down, and sometimes historical buildings and stuff like that, very old. And this would be as big as possible. So when the rich people really started doing this, the not so rich people wanted to imitate it. So then, you know, when one builder, he goes and he buys some cow pasture and then he builds many houses in it, housing developments, and usually their houses are pretty much all alike. And usually they're not such spectacular houses because they're not for such rich people. But now you see these developments, each house is huge. And they call it, so a big house is called a mansion. So these are called McMansion, you know, like McDonald's. McMansions, all the huge mansions, but all exactly alike. And although they're big, they're very cheap. The materials are not good. So people want, I have a big house, you see. I'm rich. I'm an important person. I have a big house, a giant house, giant cars. Of course, pretty soon, giant wife, giant. Giant. So people, this is exactly right. People think I can get all this. I can have all this. And everything is wonderful. And they simply forget that you're going to get kicked out. It's just going to be all gone. Everything is just pulled out from under you. It's an illusion, and the time when all illusions are revealed for what they are is the time of death. It's all removed. There was no more real. It can go. So what's the reality? So this is it. It's a Gandharapura. It's totally a figment of your imagination. People want to be permanent. They are making arrangements for permanence all the time. They want to be secure. Therefore, they have insurance. Therefore, they have, well, security services. Some of these big houses, you know, they have invisible light beams, nobody can get in. Sometimes guard dogs, and sometimes they hire. One of the biggest of these ferry houses around is the one that's owned by Bill Gates. It's famous for its size and also for its high-tech security. But he's going to sit in there and, you know, somehow or other, in spite of all the defenses and all the security, in spite of the war on terrorism and the police forces and everything else, death is going to come through, you know, like a little pin, and bore through all of it, and bang! Goodbye, Bill Gates. There's no security. Death gets through. But they're thinking, somehow or other, they can make themselves safe and secure. So again, we have this pessimistic view, and Prabhupada quotes this song by Vidyapati. This is a very nice song. Actually, Prabhupada recorded it once. It's in Maithili, the language of Mathila. It's not in Bengali or Sanskrit. This poem, Tatala Sakate, means scorched, you know, burned, scorched on the sandy beach. Here's the song. I'll read you the translation. It begins like this. O Lord, completely forgetting you. This is where the trouble begins. O Lord, completely forgetting you. I have offered my mind unto the society of women, children, and friends. If you're a woman, say, man. Into the society of women, children, and friends. But this experience has been just like offering a drop of water unto the burning hot sands of the beach. How can I possibly be relieved of this great misery? So actually here in the poem it's a drop of water on the sandy beach. But even that, it's very hot on the beach, you know, and you're burning up. I always found going to the beach a very miserable experience myself. You take a wife and the children to the beach, everyone suffers. I do anyway. First of all, you know, it really is very hot, and if you're not careful, you know, you are scorched. And you get this sunburn, and then there's little sand grains in there which rub it, and then everyone's hot, so they say, let's get some ice cream, and you get this ice cream, and this sticky stuff is melting all over the place, and the kids are all whiny and unhappy and sticky, and this is called fun. So I think the beach is a place of suffering. So here, I've offered my mind. In other words, I'm trying to become happy or relieve my miseries, and I've gotten all these things together, the family, the children, my friends, all these stuff. But how does it solve my unhappiness? It's like putting water on burning sand. It just doesn't do anything. It's a drop of water. He continues, I'll read the other verses. O Madhava, as a consequence, I am rendered totally despondent. That is very morose or sad. You are the savior of the universe and are merciful to the helpless souls. Therefore, I place my hope only in you. You see, one has to become materially hopeless, a kinshana, a completely... feel oneself helpless in the material world before people turn to Krishna. Usually that happens only after great suffering. But it doesn't have to. All you have to do is look. There's a famous story about Lord Buddha that's told that he was a prince, Prince Siddhartha, the Sakyamuni Kshatriyas, And somehow or other there had been some astrological prediction that this son of theirs, this prince, will be either a very great king or a very great renunciant. But the parents certainly didn't want him to become a renunciant, to leave everything, go away, take sannyas like that. That's the last thing they wanted. So they decided that they would make sure he never became upset with material life. So he was raised and brought up and kept within their confines of the palace grounds. And within there, everything was nice. Every person that came in, all the servants, all the helpers, were all young and good looking. Nobody looked bad. Nobody was old. Everything tasted good. All the food was great. Everything, like beautiful wife and concubines and all, everything, just to satisfy everything. Everything was perfect. Still, he became a little curious as to why he was never allowed outside the palace walls. So the story is that one day he went out and he saw this person coming by that was all crooked and bent old, and something was wrong with their skin and they looked awful. And they said, "What's wrong with that man? That's just an old guy. He's just an old man." And he was just horrified. "This is what happened." "Yeah, it happens to everybody." And then, of course, the story that he saw somebody who was sick with tuberculosis and coughing and shaking with fever and all thin and all this stuff. And again, horrified about disease. And then he saw a corpse, a dead body. And he understood right away, just by seeing these three things, the whole picture. And he left home. If you just notice, but we are willfully not noticing. This is called Maya for a reason. We are not seeing. It is a Gandharva Pura. We're not really seeing what's really there. Anyway, he continues, this disillusioned person, this pessimist, wandering about in a half-alive condition. This is very good, because the other thing is that the people, while they're enjoying this illusion, they're not really living their own lives. You see, they've made themselves unconscious in self-defense, or not to see what the situation in the material world is. They've really lowered their consciousness. But you cannot become selectively unconscious. If you lower your awareness, it goes down everywhere. So also everything becomes stale. And then when you see people who actually are, for some circumstances, are actually forced by circumstance to confront the nature of the world, like sometimes soldiers in battle. It was a terrible experience, but they also loved it. And they say, "I never felt so alive in my life." Because they just said, "Okay, this is what's going to happen. There's death everywhere. I'm going to die. I'm going to just cast my fate to the winds, and whatever happens, happens." And suddenly, they felt so alive. Their consciousness increased. So people who are maintaining illusions like that, first of all, there's all this mental energy that goes into it, which is very draining to maintain an illusion. And there's this reduction in consciousness, so actually you don't even really enjoy. Prabhupada says that people have only a little mental happiness. He calls this mental happiness. Oh, I have a nice house. I have a nice wife. I have an important position. That's it. And from that to this little bit, they have to suck out some joy. You know, it's just not there. Wandering about in a half-alive condition, I spent my life in utter disgrace. Uncountable days passed as a frivolous child and as a useless old man. I have been intoxicated by the pleasure of sharing romantic adventures with beautiful young women. When will I ever get the chance to worship you? So in the beginning, a child, an old man, useless, and in the middle, having love affairs. Numberless Brahmas have died one after another, whereas you are without beginning or end. All of them take birth from you and are again absorbed in you, just like waves in the ocean. Now you're contemplating the vastness of the scheme of things. So Brahma, whose vast lifetime, then you want a long life, there's Brahma. But they've died one after another. You think they have a long life? What are they in comparison to Krishna? So they're even Brahma like waves in the ocean. Final verse. But Vajrapati confesses that now at the end of his life he is fearful of death. O Lord, there is no shelter other than you. You will always remain celebrated as being the Lord of both the beginning and the beginningless. Now the responsibility for my deliverance from this material world is entirely yours. This is a nice song. It's quoted. Prabhupada quotes this quite frequently, actually. It's the Japati song. So he quotes it here, quotes the first verse, how all the things we do for happiness, given the misery of material existence, they don't really suffice, not sufficient to do anything. Sometimes I've tried. we're preaching Krishna consciousness to some new person, and we try to tell them that there's not any happiness in the material world. One guy said to me, "Who are you to tell me I'm not happy?" He said, "So people are unhappy." And suffering, you can see them suffering, and yet they don't know they're suffering. And they're not even aware of it. Prabhupada came to the West because people are suffering. I mean, what's somebody coming from India to America? Everybody who comes from India to America now thinks that they're suffering in India and not suffering in America, but Prabhupada did just the opposite, because he saw that people are suffering. And they're so foolish they don't know it. And I said they made themselves not know it like this. Or sometimes the suffering or the unhappiness is so much a part of one's existence that one is not even aware of it. I remember one time, I think it was, where was it? It was Gita Nagari. It was at the Gita Nagari farm. We were taking prasadam in the morning. A bunch was sitting there. And somewhere nearby, just outside the window, there was a machine, electrical machine, or something to do with the electrical system in the building that was broken, it was malfunctioning. And it was making this noise, a really loud, irritating noise. And somebody went to find somebody who knew how to turn it off and all that other thing, you know. So we were sitting here trying to eat our khichdi, and this noise was there. And it just kept going on and on. And finally, we kind of forgot about it. We was talking to each other. Of course, we're yelling practically and everything like that. So we're all in the middle of owning prasadam and talking and everything. And suddenly the noise stopped. And we all went, whew. We had forgotten it was there. But we were so, our bodies were so tense and our ears were hurting. It was so strained. And it just sort of become our normal condition. But then when it stopped, we suddenly realized it. I thought this must be something like Brahman realization. Because really, the foundation of material existence is always anxiety and always fear. And the only way we deal with it is try to ignore it or become so used to it, we don't know what's there. In the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami nicely describes, he's praising Maharaj Pariksit for having inquired about what is one's duty in life, and especially about what is one to do at the time of death. And he says, your question is glorious, because it is beneficial for everybody. This is what you should be hearing about, as approved by all the spiritual people, the transcendentalists. He says, those persons who are materially engrossed, you know, completely absorbed in material life, are blind to the knowledge of apashyatam. This word is used, they're blind, they cannot see. Apashyatam, they're blind. Sahasrasaha, hundreds and thousands of people are blind to what atma tattva, knowledge of the self or knowledge of the supreme self, the ultimate truth. And they simply live at home, but these people, they have many things, many subjects, many topics you hear about. Not this one, but everything else they're busy with, hearing and chanting about all kinds of things, but not Krishna. He says, the lifetime of such an envious householder has passed at night, either in sleeping or in sex, and during the day, making money, maintaining the family. That's it. And then he comes to this verse about these people. Persons devoid of atma tattva do not inquire into the problems of life. Being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. So here's a man, a householder. And deha, apatya, deha body, apatya, children, kalatra, the wife, adishu, and so on, everything in relation to them. They're described as here of his atma sanyeshu, of his own, his army. His fighting soldiers, although they are asat, they're fallible. So why are they called soldiers? He says, although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. he says that he and all of them are pramataha, really crazy, too attached, and nityam pashyan api na pashyati, although they see, they do not see. Nityam pashyan api na pashyati. You know, in the Bible they have eyes but they don't see. So here's the same thing. It's obvious what the material world is like, but they're not seen. So Prabhupada talks about this, and so why are these things called soldiers? Soldier means a war. So Prabhupada explains this in the purport. The material world is called the world of death, Marcha Loka. Every living being, beginning from Brahma, whose duration of life is some thousands of millions of years, down to the germs, who live for only a few seconds, is struggling for existence. So everyone is engaged, a struggle for existence, a basic principle of biology, this instinct of self-preservation, right? Every, even the tiniest squiggle of life at least wants to stay alive. Although you can ask who succeeds, this is absolutely 100% failure. Therefore, this life is a sort of fight with material nature. Now, there's the war. We want to stay alive. What are we fighting? Material nature, which imposes death upon all. Now, this is the situation. Everybody wants to at least survive. We're fighting, we're struggling to live, and yet the enemy is material nature, and we will lose. In the human form of life, a living being is competent enough to come to an understanding of this great struggle for existence. So now Prabhupada wants us, we have to somehow come to some understanding of this great struggle for existence. But that is to say, it's unnecessary. That's our understanding. The whole struggle for existence is unnecessary. Why? Because we're eternal. When there's atmatattva, when there's self-realization, we see the whole thing as stupid. Yeah, the body is temporary, everything else is temporary. Let it be temporary. Let me, while I'm here, engage in Krishna service and make spiritual advancement. And when it all goes, bye-bye. No loss, I can live without it. But once I've identified with the body and trying to enjoy, then I'm buried in horror. Because everything I want, everything I value, everything I'm attached to will be taken away no matter what I do. And that's the situation. That's the understanding we should have. In the human form of life, a living being is competent enough to come to an understanding of this great struggle for existence. But being too attached to family members, society, country, and so on, he wants to win over the invincible material nature. Invincible means you can't conquer, but somehow or other I want to win it. I've declared war on material nature, and how am I going to win this struggle? By the aid of bodily strength, children, wife, relatives, and so on. Now this is psychologically very true, you see, because what people are doing in the material world, really they have immortality projects going on, or really God projects. They are my soldiers. I think if I'm surrounded by all these powerful or beautiful or wonderful people, I'm somehow safe. I have children. They're little replicas of myself. I may be growing old, but my children go on. And I identify with them, live through them vicariously, as you say. These are my immortality projects. People do all these things just to become big and important. Some people act on a big scale and they unnecessarily add to the pages of history just to show that they're important, because they want immortality. How? Well, their name will be forever. In the center squares of all the cities, there'll be my statue with me on a horse. Napoleon Bonaparte, here he is, a great man. My name will be in all the history books. This is what they want. This is their immortality project, their God project. Of course, all it means is that in 50 years you're just a chore for school children. They have to memorize some names and dates and forget them as soon as possible. You just cause distress to other living beings and nobody really cares. But this is what people are thinking. Even the little man has got his project. You go into their houses and he's got a wall, and in the wall are all his, you know the word trophy? Like when you win at sporting events, they give you something made of gold, and there you are playing golf or bowling balls or something like that. You got a wall of these trophies. You win at some sports events or something like that. And what are they all made out of? Well, they're not really made out of gold, but they're golden. Why gold? Because gold is immutable. It is the immortal metal. Gold never mixes with other metals. It's always pure. Therefore, gold is the immortal metal. It really is the immutable metal. That's why coins, gold coins, you know, you have a pocket full of this like immortality in your hands. Why are coins round? Originally, because round and gold is the sun. Round and silver is the moon. Now you have the sun and the moon in here. You're big. These are whole things people do, some way or another. So people have all these. They're their soldiers to advance their immortality project. But Prabhupada says one should examine the fact that his father or his father's father has already died, and that he himself is therefore also sure to die, and similarly his children, because you think, oh, they'll go on, who are the would-be or future fathers of their children, will also die in due course. No one will survive in the struggle with material nature. There it is. The history of human society definitely proves it. Yet, the foolish people still suggest that in the future they will be able to live perpetually with the help of material science. They still do this. Young girl who's a college student came to our temple to do a paper on us for some class. So I was talking to her in my office, and I was trying to tell her the facts of life. And she got uncomfortable, and she said to me, "Well, I'm certain that I won't die." I said, "Well, you know, what?" She said, "Yes." She says, I said, "Well, you see that, you know, so far everyone has." She says, "Yes, but I think I'm different. I'm sure that when it becomes a problem for me, they will have solved it." She was serious. In psychology, the name they give this attitude is narcissism. Narcissus is in Greek mythology, here, a young man who fell in love with his, he was so beautiful, everybody was going crazy for him, and he looked into the water to get a drink and saw his own face, and he fell in love with his own beauty and couldn't move and was turned into a flower. This is the story, Narcissus. So people think, I'm so wonderful, I'm so special, nothing bad can happen to me. So young people are often like that. Sometimes people manage to stay that way for a long time, but let's see, it was amazing. I mean, Jesus. This poor fund of knowledge exhibited by human society is certainly misleading, and it is all due to ignoring the constitution of the living soul. This material world exists only as a dream due to our attachment to it. Otherwise, the living soul is always different from the material nature. The great ocean of material nature is tossing with the waves of time, and the so-called living conditions are something like foaming bubbles, which appear before us as bodily self, wife, children, society, countrymen, etc. Due to a lack of knowledge of the self, we become victimized by the force of ignorance and thus spoil the valuable energy of human life in a vain search after permanent living conditions which are impossible in this material world. The whole materialistic advancement of human civilization is like the decoration of a dead body. Or is this ever pessimism? Everyone is a dead body, flapping only for a few days. And yet the energy of human life is being wasted in the decoration of this dead body. Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out the duty of the human being after showing the actual position of bewildered human activities. Persons who are devoid of the knowledge of Atma-tattva are misguided, but those who are devotees of the Lord and have perfect realization of transcendental knowledge are not bewildered. So Prabhupada describes the situation of the spiritual and the material world as an incompatible situation. We are eternal. And what we look for is always eternal life, full of bliss and full of knowledge. We want, that's the satisfaction of the self. There's nothing wrong with this. This is our nature, to want to satisfy the self. In fact, when Prabhupada was asked once, what is the meaning of life? He said, the meaning of life is to enjoy. And I was with some devotees where we heard this or listening to a tape, and some devotees got like really upset because they thought we're not supposed to enjoy. So actually, in this sense, we have no quarrel with materialists. We all agree that the meaning of life is to enjoy. It's just that because we have some knowledge, we see that whatever they are doing for enjoyment will increase their suffering. So they are just trying to enjoy, but they, because all material enjoyment, every time there's sense gratification, it increases, unnecessary sense gratification, it increases the identification of the self with the material body. That's the problem. You cannot enjoy without materially, in the senses, without increasing or getting more and more into the material body. The fate of the material body is extremely unpleasant if you happen to think it's you. And you become more and more, because you want to enjoy, you become more and more attached and possessive to the objects of enjoyment, but time and material nature tends to separate you, so you're always in anxiety. And as soon as there's attachment, there's also fear and there's anger. all these things are all unnecessary, because we don't have to really, for our happiness, we have to, it's all there within the spiritual realm. But we identify with the body, we forget who we are, and we seek this happiness in a place where it doesn't exist. That's called illusion. And it's so easy to see. But people are working hard to maintain their illusions. There's this famous entertainer in the 1930s, Josephine Baker, famous for dancing with almost no clothes on. A black lady from America who became quite famous in France. She used to wear a little apron of bananas only and dance on stage. But anyway, she became quite famous, Josephine Baker. And in her old age, she was persuaded to do one last performance. So she was on stage, she noticed that somebody in the audience in the back was looking at her through opera glasses or binoculars. And she stopped and she said, "Put them away." And then she said, "Preserve your illusions. That's all you have." Well, we're here to say that's not all you have. So it's best to get rid of them. Okay, any questions? Yes, comments.
We see Krishna appearing in the midst of all these riches and monarchy, and he used to do this yajna, and then all these kings came with big heaps of gold and emeralds and everything, and so many wives there. And even Krishna, on the battlefield, he used Yudhisthira to lie, to get all food, to hold the whole battle, and it's just talking as temporary. The whole thing is like a temporary achievement they had, the kingdom. So why is Krishna not appearing in a Brahmin surrounding, teaching renunciation?
Oh, he does all those things. He does that too, doesn't he? Appears as Lord Chaitanya, as Narayan Rishi. I mean, he covers all the bases. So he also appears as a Kshatriya, especially when it says necessary to kill a lot of demons. He shows up as a Kshatriya, acts like a Kshatriya. But still, those who know what's going on can understand who he is. Not only appear in all positions in human life, he also, Prabhupada says, appears in every species of life. So his job is to descend periodically and reestablish Dharma. Now, I have to say, if I see how Krishna does it, I may not understand why he does what he does, but you know, on the other hand, it's a little over my level how to save the world. And I just take it on faith that Krishna knows what he's doing. And I'm not in a position to judge him. In this material world, you meet many, many people that are convinced that if they were God, they would do a better job. They have a very, very small idea. Usually the job is better job that God would do something to give them more material happiness. That's what they think. Yeah.
Things you did in your life, because you're confused and the amount of the earth and you
Sandhya, Ante Narayana Smriti. Remember the Lord at the time of death. That's the thing. The holy name is very convenient and portable, and easy to remember. But the Lord is there in many forms. Spiritual master also, because spiritual master means one person who intensely reminds us of Krishna. So we should not think of the spiritual master as separate from Krishna. Then you're going to have a cult or something. But if you remember to see the spiritual master in connection with Krishna, then the spiritual master always also reminds us of Krishna. That's okay. And so it's individual variations. To the time of death, you know, there are many factors that are out of our control. Where I'll die, under what condition. So many things are up to Krishna, how this happens. So we should do all our preparations. Generally, we should assume that we're going to die very quickly. Prabhupada said this, you know, when people say, well, I got a lot of time because I'll, you know, when I'm old and everything, then it'll happen. The Prophet said, old age means just before you die. So can anyone say they're not old? So the best thing is to assume, actually the best thing is to live this moment like it's the moment of death. Really. It's very good. It makes you detached. People used to practice in Europe in the olden days remembering death, because one tended to forget. So in medieval Europe all the time they would have these things, memento moris, the things that remind you of death. You see this Derriere picture of Saint Jerome in his study. Here's the saint sitting in his study. And what does he have? He has a human skull, not because he's a medical student, because he looks at that stone and he says, there is me. So people did that all the time. You know, this famous at the Cemetery of the Innocents in Paris, the Danse Macabre, the dance of death, you know. There's one great English poet, John Donne, who was also a clergyman. He became a big position in the Church of England. And he had his official portrait painted in all his, you know, robes and everything. And that was hung at the entrance of his house. And so in those days when people were buried, they were buried wrapped in a cloth, which was called a winding sheet. Not on the coat and tie, but just wrapped around them, the winding sheet. So around his portrait he kept draped his winding sheet. So every time he looked at himself in all his greatness and majesty, he would see this. People did that. Now if you do that, people think there's something wrong with you. But that was why. So they would remember. They would not forget. So our idea should be every minute. Any moment I can die, I should always be thinking of death. And any minute this whole thing can go. The author of the James Bond novels, Ian Fleming, he would never ride in an airplane because he said an airplane is a comfortable living room that at any moment can turn into a blazing inferno. But any comfortable living room at any moment can turn into a blazing inferno. You don't have to be at, you know, 10,000 meters. You know, you just we're already at 10,000 meters all the time. We don't know. You look down, there's nothing there, really. We're only being held up by Krishna. We should think like this. At any minute, the whole thing can go. Whether they're terrorists or not. All right, it's time to stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.